Macklin left the real estate office at 9:35 and walked toward the guard shack at the bridge 50 yards away. Crow walked with him. J.T. McGonigal, who had been there the first time Macklin came to Stiles Island, was on duty again. He was not cut from Captain Billups' pattern. He was what the captain considered a civilian employee. While he had on the tan regulation uniform shirt, he wore no hat and he carried no weapon. If there was trouble, he called the patrol. Macklin spoke to him as he reached the shack.
"How you doing, Mac?"
McGonigal put his clipboard down. There were no cars coming in either direction.
"Good, Mr. Smith. What do you need?"
"Just wanted to say goodbye," Macklin said, and shot McGonigal in the forehead. He stepped away as McGonigal started to fall. Crow stepped in and caught McGonigal on his shoulder and picked him up. Fran, carrying a briefcase and a folding sign, came from the real estate office as soon as he heard the shot. As Crow carried J.T. McGonigal away, Fran, wearing the tan shirt of the dead Michael Deering, placed the sign in the roadway by the gate and slipped into the guard shack. Fran took a small remote control mechanism that looked like a garage door opener from the briefcase and put it on the counter beside the clipboard. He brought out a cellular phone and put it beside the remote. He took a big stainless steel Ruger 357 Magnum revolver with a walnut handle from the briefcase and laid it beside the phone. Finally, he placed a pair of binoculars beside the Ruger. Crow reached the real estate office and bent forward and allowed McGonigal's dead body to slide to the ground, where it was concealed by two decorative cedar shrubs behind the building. Then he went back into the real estate office and waited for Macklin. J.D. was sitting at the desk, toying with two cellular phones on the desk in front of him, turning them idly in slow circles. On the couch, Marcy was trying not to look at anything. Nice-looking woman, Crow thought. Macklin came back into the real estate office.
"Okay," Macklin said. "We got the bridge secured. J.D., you ready to kibosh the phones?"
5 minutes," J.D. said, "from whenever you say."
"After you do it," Crow said. "What do I hear? I try to use the phone."
"Busy signal. Either way. Calling in, calling out. People call, get a busy signal, hang up. Be a while before anyone catches on and something's wrong."
"Every minute we can buy helps us," Macklin said. He looked at his watch. "I got 7 minutes before 10. Crow and I are going to start rounding people up at 10:15. I want the phone lines fucked by then."
"Easy," J.D. said.
"Once you fuck the phone lines, you can cut Marcy loose, but keep her here. She wants her purse, give it to her. I've already checked it. She can go in the lav and lock the door if she wants. There's no window."
"Be easier to leave her like she is," J.D. said. "Then I don't have to watch her."
"We want you to do it our way," Macklin said. "Don't we, Crow?"
"We do," Crow said, and held J.D.'s look until J.D. looked away.
J.D. shrugged as if Crow didn't scare him, which Crow did, and both of them knew it.
"Show thing," J.D. said.
Macklin picked up one of the cell phones and followed Crow out the door.